Bienvenue au train des jeux. Nous sommes ici à jouer au basketball. Il va vous conduire à la victoire. Car bonne la lente grande effort. Et l'esprit du bel an qui vit en tous les mans. Et l'esprit qui ne meurt jamais. Parce que basketball, oui, basketball a arrivé.
Jouer.
Welcome to BizCastball, the Basketball BizCast. My name is Corbin Smith. How are you doing? I'm well. I'm in New York City. There's not a lot of plans here. That's the main thing I can tell you. Today I spoke to David Roth. He is an editor at Vice Sports, a writer at Vice Sports, the commandant of the Classical. And we talked today in the back of the Vice offices. Enjoy.
Like, that's
we started recording. I'm just letting you know.
Wait, when? How long?
We just started.
All right, cool. So, like, the last few minutes, you have all that.
No, I don't have any of that.
I thought it was really good.
It was, look, David, it was amazing.
It's a shame that no one's going to get to hear it, because I've already forgotten
all
the things I said.
You complimented people.
I did, a lot of people.
You complimented two people. I'm not going to say who.
You can say one of them.
Oh, yeah. You complimented Bob.
Silverman.
Yeah.
That's when you were talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I won't let you say who the other person you were complimenting
is. Just, it's not important.
No.
I think that...
There's absolutely no way that person would hear this.
Right. Anyone that's listening to it should assume that that it's them that I was complimenting.
Oh, yeah. That sounds nice. That's really nice.
It's a really good group of listeners. Talented people. Good-looking people.
Oh, absolutely.
Extremely knowledgeable on topics
of the
day.
You have to be good-looking to listen to me talk and not feel bad about yourself.
I think you have to be looking to listen to you talk and really understand the perspective from which everything is coming.
Yeah, because I'm unbelievably insanely handsome.
Yeah, it's weird. I'm not looking. No one can tell because this is audio only, but I can't actually look directly at you while we're doing this.
Oh, no, I'm like the sun.
It's distracting. Yeah. I actually, I have a thing where I can't look directly at super attractive people when I see them. I was looking at Corbin when I said that, so, you know, it's not...
Whoa!
No, it's not total. I'm just saying. I looked away. Okay. Now I'm looking at the microphone. But I saw, I'm pretty sure that I saw Emily Ratajkowski, the model lady at Grand Central Market in Los Angeles. Ratajkowski.
Okay.
But, and I was embarrassed to be near enough to her look at her. Yeah, it was weird. I felt bad. I was like, oh, this poor lady walking around looking like that.
And you.
Me, and just a bunch of, like, mid-30s asshole sports blog dudes. Any of them could just look at her at any time, and she wouldn't have no way of saying, please stop doing that. So I focused on my coffee and I left.
So, David, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm well. We're in the offices of Vice Magazine.
That's true.
Where you are currently employed.
Yes, this is all correct. You are the second major luminary figure in American political and cultural life that's been in here today.
Because Diamond Joe has been in today.
That's right. Smokey Joe Biden was in here this morning. It was extremely inconvenient. Much less security attended Corbin's visit.
But your employers are going to get so much.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
No, this feel like you're being ungrateful.
No, I was happy to be near Joe Biden. I think Joe Biden's terrific. And I, for the most part.
Did you feel like he had plugs? I've seen him in person before, and thought, plugs.
Maybe. He was pretty far away. So he was far enough away that what I can tell you is that his teeth and the cuffs of his shirt were the exact same shade of white, which was just a shining alabaster, like, pure white.
I feel like I should be like, oh, man, of course, but I just am impressed.
No, fantastic teeth. Kind of spoke off the cuff, not in a, like, moving or whatever sort of... He's just like a... I guess just a peak uncle, like a high caliber uncle that any of us would be proud to have. Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I feel like everybody kind of has him in, like, you know, if there was a fantasy league for uncles or whatever, you could draft one that you could use for just a week a year. I think he'd be any reasonable person's choice.
I saw John Ashcroft speak once.
Really?
Yes.
How was that?
It stunk.
Does he look, I always thought that he looked like he had the same haircut as, like, the when you get like a Lego man that's got like the part
hair. it's not like a good
but it's like his hair could just be lowered onto the top of his head and there'd be like a little sound in there.
I saw Howard Dean speak too.
Me once. Too. It was terrible. The long week.
I saw him speak after his political career was over.
Okay.
But and I thought, that's like Howard Dean, but he's really tan. John Ashcroft, I thought, that's John Ashcroft. Uh-huh. That is the John Ashcroftiest person I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. And I was obsessed with getting a picture of me giving him a high five or like with my arm around his shoulder. I think I was 16 or 17 at the time. And I sort of started to approach and the security guards went like,
yeah, that's a drag. I'm sure that he would have enjoyed high-fiving you probably. Probably very satisfying. Like he also, I don't know that many people. Yeah, man, let's do it. Oh, that was great. I don't know if it showed, did the audio register? Nice. Yeah. There it is. Yeah, I did it twice. And if John Ashcroft is listening, I would recommend seeking that experience out. I don't know what other pleasures John Ashcroft allows himself in his life.
Probably not a lot.
Not a lot.
Reading the Bible.
Songs about America that he writes himself and performs at gatherings.
Reading the risky parts of the Bible.
The parts of it. Like,
sex parts.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of them. Begetting and shit.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Song Solomon.
Yeah. If this is getting too adult for John Ashcroft, you can probably fast forward to just, we'll be done talking about this in 8-10 minutes.
Yeah, and then we'll start talking about how you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, for real. How the body is terrible, and if anything, a thing to be denied.
Absolutely.
Yeah, cool. Well, this has been a great, thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. So we're in the vice offices.
We are.
And I have a brief story to tell.
Okay.
You were finishing something, and I was waiting to speak to you. And I was making tea. Because I wanted to give myself something to do to make myself not seem like a weirdo.
I thought you could just sit down if you wanted to.
I guess, but I couldn't. Okay, this is like.
No, it's good. You definitely came up with a not. It's not weird to make tea for 15 minutes.
I was wearing a backpack and a coat at the same time.
It's really more of like an anorak. People can't see it.
But here's the thing. At a certain point, to give myself busy work, I kept the cup in front of me and I just put the tea bag up and down, I think probably for 2 minutes. And then at a certain point, I realized that somebody was looking at me.
I'm sure that they'd seem weirder.
And I looked up, just for half a second, and he has a smile, and he's like, "I see you. I see you in this teabag, man." And then I was like, "Oh, yeah." So I squeezed the teabag and threw it away.
Was he like, did you sense that he was judging you, or just that he was like, this guy is serious about his tea, and respect that?
I think he knew, I mean, I guess you always assume that everybody kind of understands like how you're expressing your own neuroses, but I felt like he knew I was trying to give myself something to do.
I think that, yeah, it's an office. That's what people do here.
try to drag
some of the non-work portions of the day out as long as possible, making sure your tea is perfect.
It occurred to me that if I worked here, I would probably clean stuff all the time.
Yeah, I wash my own dishes.
Yeah.
And this is the thing with working in offices that's like, for all the other grossnesses of it, like, I am never better hydrated than when I'm working in an office.
Oh, yes. Because then you get an opportunity to go to the bathroom.
Right, too. That's like the little knock-on effect that comes with it. So, like, healthier, and you're getting some extremely light cardio in and out of the chair, to and from the water cooler or bathroom.
This is a very modern office. You guys haven't moved yet, right?
Not yet. The new space, which hilariously displaced two prominent DIY venues and a gallery. I don't even see the irony in it, but I guess other people do. The youth culture brand movement. But that, I think that move is going to happen next month or something. I don't know.
The space is so modern.
It's also like industrial in that, like, it was a, garage and whatever. Yeah. But yes, it is pretty modern.
Like the bathrooms, you can't tell that they're doors.
Yeah. It took me the first day or so that I was here, I didn't really know where they were.
And you just knew there was a wall right there.
It's something. There's really good coffee here, which I believe I mentioned to you earlier, like something I've never experienced in an office before. An offie, I call them.
Oh, that's kind of weird. Yeah, just call them offices.
I don't know. I consider it's like a diminutive, like you would call a friend by like a nickname or something. I'm going to go see Offie this morning, and then off you go. Onto the
offie.
The offie. Yeah, this is great. Just let me know when you want to start recording the podcast.
Oh, no, I started already.
Oh, interesting. No, it's perfect.
Oh, yeah, everyone's going to hear this.
Good, all right. That's terrific. That makes me happy. Do you have any questions, or should we wrap this thing up?
I think my first question is, do you still write about sports?
I do.
Or do you write about, like, culture, music, food? No.
I mostly write about sports and sometimes get to write about the other stuff. You know, as it touches on sports and then also other things.
Sports. All right, good.
Yeah, no, that's mostly. I miss the other stuff to a certain extent, but I can, find my moments to do it. No one can see this because they're this is audio only, as you know, but they're removing the things that they used to black out the windows during Biden's visit today. They're going out a door near us.
Why did they have to black out the windows?
No one knew that Biden was here.
Oh.
Didn't want to...
People didn't... I mean, how would people not know Biden? Like, every Vice employee was tweeting about it.
Only afterwards. It was made very clear before it happened. Yeah, it was that, like, that was after he had finished speaking. Like, but they made clear yesterday that...
So wait, did he speak? Because I saw he did an interview, but did he speak?
He spoke to our president in an interview that I have not seen, and then did, like, you know, sort of address the office in a avuncular way for a few minutes, and that was that.
If you don't mind me asking, I'm very curious about the content of the speech.
It was fine. It was, like, kind of a grab bag of things. I mean, it was like, you guys are doing great work, and...
Joe Biden loves you guys.
Yep. And then he was just like,
kind of thinks they sold out,
yeah,
a little bit.
Maybe. I think so. Yeah. I think he was upset about Death by Audio closing. I know he mentioned that. But there was stuff about the, about, you know, like, sort of a grab bag of youth issues, you know, like, all of which Biden is mostly correct about, but it was like, you know, whether it be college loans or the environment or gay marriage or, you know, whatever. Like, you guys are doing good work. There you go. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, it's Joe Biden.
Anybody high five him? Or?
No, we were not allowed to be near him. And there was a wait to get into the office this morning.
Did anybody bring in their baby to get him?
No, I was like coming up with things like if I met Joe Biden, like if he was going around shaking everybody's hand, which it didn't seem to me was that unrealistic of a thing. Like, I think if he had been left to his own devices, like, he would still be here.
We gotta make sure.
Yeah, just like hanging out with everybody. And like, there's part of me that was gonna be like, do you think that you could get Vice unblocked on Amtrak's internet, because I know Amtrak is very important to him, and I also know from having ridden Amtrak that
you can't read Vice on Amtrak,
because there's like nudity sometimes and stuff, you know, like it's Amtrak's kind of
Amtrak censors the internet out here,
just in a common sense sort of way, I think, you know.
I don't think I've ever ran into censorship. I look at pornography on Amtrak a lot.
Do you? But it's all stuff that you have stored on your personal
on the Amtrak cloud.
Yeah. Oh wow, that's interesting. I guess it's different in the lines of the Pacific Northwest.
You have a box account, and it's just, cool. Pornography.
Yeah.
Gross stuff, too.
There when you need it.
Yeah.
Like, say you're taking, like, a one-hour train ride.
Yeah, you know, 1 hour, half an hour.
Yeah. No, that's reasonable. That's why, there's no explicit policy against pornography on the New York City subway, but I feel like if internet becomes widely available on it, we'll need to formulate some sort of... Just like an agreement.
I was trying to use the internet on the subway today.
Yeah, it doesn't work so good, does it? Yeah,
it doesn't work so good.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
I was really disappointed.
I can imagine. It's like,
but I'm not a voter. So.
Yeah, I know. When
are they going to let tourists vote in New York?
I mean, they have, in many cases, they're not tourists. They're foreign nationals parking their wealth in luxury condominiums. But they already have a pretty good deal here.
Oh, sorry. That's what I mean. I'm one of those.
Yeah. This is the other, not to blow up your spot, but...
yeah, I'm a royal.
Yeah, Corbin is here to buy a 6,500 square foot studio located
High
Line.
You know that fire?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, we are near a still burning fire of a warehouse on a $100 million valuation Williamsburg property.
Let's just say I shifted some money around.
Corbin's arrival times coincidentally to the ignition of this thing, but not...
Not to...
Yeah. People are leaving the office near us now. None of them said goodbye to Corbin, but you could tell they would have.
If I worked here.
Yeah. But yeah, it's good. So anyway, yeah, we are indeed in the office. Now you have proof.
Yeah, I didn't make this up.
I'm just saying it to seem cool. I'm in an office.
That is really cool.
I'm in an offie right now. I'm just hanging out in the office.
Was there ever an age where you thought being in an office might be cool?
That's a good question. Probably not. But I remember, like, there would be times where I would go into, like, my mother's or my dad's office, and they'd be like, I remember my mom worked at a big company, and they had, like, a, you know, it was, like, free lunch, I guess. And, like, that seemed pretty neat. You know, like, you go down to, like, a cafeteria or whatever, and there's, like, a salad bar, kind of, like, unlimited, like, bacon bits or whatever, but, like, unlimited bacon bits at $0 and 0 cents in price.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That company's not in business anymore. Probably not because of how much salad I ate, but I don't know.
Yeah. But what if?
We don't, right, that's what I was going to say. It's a question that's dogged me through the years. But no, I actually kind of do, I'd say I like, you know, being in the office as opposed to being at home, but writing from home for so long, And I seldom went into the office when I was at SB Nation. Like, it was actually nice to not be, like, contorting yourself into some weird position on the couch and trying to write something, like, to be around other people or to be
in public. Do you feel like it structures your day a little more?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, like, at the very least, like, it forces a certain, like, discipline upon you in that, like, you went in the office, like, this is a non-traditional work environment in some ways, but, like, I'm wearing pants all the time when I'm in here, like, 100%. And, like, you know, there's other people around, so you're, you know, just behaving sort of differently. Which, yeah, I guess is good. I don't know. I haven't written as much here as I have at home, but...
That's so hard for me, writing from home. I have to do...
Or do you go to, like, coffee shops or something?
No. What I do that... The only thing I've done that works so far is that I crazy exhaust myself on a bicycle. And then I...
When there's, like, no resistance left, then you can write.
Yes.
Wow.
Because then I'll just be like, well, I'm too tired to do anything, but...
Yeah.
But write, so...
I have a similar thing in that, like, there's a lot of times, like, the stuff that I write will go up, like, later in the day, which is not when it's going to be most read or whatever, but it's, like, I'll start thinking about writing it at a reasonable hour, and then it's just, like, you have to wear through... I should try exercising, honestly, it might get me there faster. But just in terms of, like, having to, like, just, like, wait until, like, suddenly I can let myself write. But, like, it'll be, you know, hours of screwing around, like, writing a sentence every 10 minutes or, like, being on Twitter waiting for something to happen.
You probably don't play computer games. I do a little bit.
I don't, and I think it's greatly fortunate that I never picked that habit up, because it's one of those things. I know that I would like it. I know that I would be too into it. But, like, yeah, I'm lucky.
I have to strategically take stuff off my computer. So, like, well, then it'll take me, like, 5 hours to put it back on. So that means that there's at least 5 hours where I'm not going to be distracted by...
It's tough when you have to basically be, like, counterpunching with yourself at all times.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have, like, wicked bad attention problems. And it's a fight every day.
Like, diagnosed or just, the way the humans are? Oh, right, yeah. I don't know if I haven't seen them diagnosed as such, but yeah, it's hard. With any of this stuff, it's hard. Focusing is difficult, even if you don't have an ADD thing.
Anyway, this is a basketball podcast.
Yep. As anyone who's listening could surely tell.
Do you have any relationship to basketball right now?
I do. I mean, I like to watch, but it's pretty.
You are a former New Jersey Nets fan.
I am, and I never warmed to the Brooklyn Nets. I'm working on, like, if they were funner, I think that I would be able to watch them differently. They're terrible, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They're terrible.
They're depressing,
terrible
too.
To watch. Like, lousy experience at the game, for the most part. Like...
Is Barclays not fun?
It's not, like, unfun. The Garden is nice. Like, the Garden is a really cool place to watch a game. The seats are... Like, there's not really a bad seat in the place. And, I mean, the Knicks are worse than terrible in a lot of ways. But, like, I like going to games at the Garden. Barclays is... It's not bad. I mean, like, the sight lines aren't bad or whatever. It's just got this, like, feel that... Or absence of feel, maybe, that, like, new arenas can kind of sort of tend to have. It's, like, these huge banks of luxury boxes and a lot of, like, VIP areas and whatever. And then if you're up in the upper tank, it's, like, really sharply canted seats. It's like frosty cold at all times, which is kind of a puzzling thing for it to be. And just in general, it has a kind of the nice thing to say about it, and I think it's actually, like, probably the fairest thing, is that, like, they're still figuring out how to, like, be a team and have a team there. And these are people that have not, you know, if they were basketball fans before, they were cheering for the Knicks, and then they just basically, like, adopted the Nets when the Nets moved there. And so a lot of the things that sort of come naturally to you if you've been to, like, a million basketball games, to sort of know when to cheer and when to be quiet and, like, get a sense of, you know, how to be somebody at a game. But, like, they're still sort of learning that, and it's actually, like, you know, in a generation, if they stick around and if the team isn't so terrible that it turns people off, like, then the kids that are there now, like, screaming constantly, like, mm-hmm. eventually they'll know when to shut up, and then eventually, like, maybe they'll have kids and whatever.
Yeah. I don't think things about fan bases very much. I don't, like, it's just pretty not interesting to me.
And also, invariably, like, you're generalizing in some way that looks bad.
But I'm right? The only one I'm willing is I always feel like that the Knicks fans are good theater.
They sure are. Well, it's also, they're hilarious too because they're exceptionally grandiose for a team that has not won a championship. Like Richard Nixon was president when they won the championship.
I was talking to Bob about this semi recently, and I said that in New York, it seems like that there's like a cool team and a good team and a scrappy team. Mm-hmm. So you know, Giants, Jets, Yankees, Mets.
Yeah.
And it's just like the Knicks just occupy both spaces.
Yeah, it's weird too because like they had a brief period and it was so brief. And kind of like poignantly so in retrospect before the Melo trade, but after they signed Amari,
yeah,
it was like it was the Nuggets plus Amari plus like skinny Raymond Felton, and like that team was and D'Antoni coaching it, and they were for like a few months.
Such a fun team.
They were a blast, and I think often about like what it might have been like had that team because that was them as a scrappy team. It was like the rare instance where like they were allowed to more or less rebuild.
Yeah.
And sort of, you know, if they had not... I mean, I say this as somebody that doesn't care about or even really for the Knicks. I never have. But, like, I still feel sad thinking about, like, what would have happened if they had just waited until the offseason and signed Melo, which they could have done, and added him to that roster. Then you have a very interesting team. Like, it still, you know, doesn't mean that Amari doesn't screw his knee up again. It doesn't mean that, you know, like, Gallinari doesn't have the problems he's had, but... Like, they could have actually been fun. Like, even when the Knicks were good, you know, in my lifetime, they were never fun. Like, they would make the finals, but they'd make the finals by just, like, wrestling P.J. Brown for six games in the Eastern Conference Finals. And
yeah, like the time the Knicks were good basically contributed to the end of man defense.
Yeah.
Like they were like, wait, something has to change if this team can be good.
And, like, some really crucial, like, attrition in people caring about basketball, too, that sort of, like, you know, there was Jordan and everybody watched for that. And then, like, during that Knicks period where everybody was like, this is what a good basketball game is like. Like, this is, it's... yeah, like, all right, 74-68, interesting. Like, I think maybe I will take up knitting and just bail on the shit. Which is, like... And so the fans got to go watch their team go to the finals. They just never got to, like, actually enjoy the experience.
The knitting craze and the downfall of basketball.
Right? Yeah, there's a very good academic... Maybe even book to be written about that.
A whole encyclopedia.
Yeah, for sure. It's exciting. It's great to know that there's still so much.
What was Prudential like?
I mean, I only went to a couple games there. I went to games, I'm old enough that most of the games I went to were at the Brendan Byrne Arena, which became Continental Airlines Arena, which then became the Izod Center. And that was in...
That's where the Devils play, right?
Yeah. Well, now the Devils are at the Prudential Center.
Okay.
They were all playing in the same space at the same time, and it was this kind of like... crummy a friend compared it to like a giant insect that had pulled over to the side of the highway to take a dump. That's what the arena sort of looked like. It was this like four-legged squat white structure, and those games were like, it meant a lot to me. Also like not a great place to watch a basketball game, honestly. Like clean, and it could get really loud, like, and again there was no real bad seats, but just most of those Nets teams were not good, and they you had to drive there, unless you were coming from New York City. And so those games, like...
You pretty much have to drive everywhere in Jersey, right?
Sort of. I mean, like, there's stuff you can get to on mass transit, like, but just not always from New Jersey. It was for a while when the Nets were at the Izod Center. So when I first got out of college was the years that... So I watched the Nets through when I was a kid. The Drazen Petrovic era was, like, the highlight of that. But for the most part, they were pretty shitty and, like, not even charmingly so a lot of the time. And then as soon as I graduated from school, when they got Jason Kidd, like, the whole thing turned. And that was, you know, the best that the franchise ever was in New Jersey. And, you know, as happy as I've ever been able to be as a Nets fan. And my friends we just moved here after school, but we would take trains out from the Port Authority, or take buses out, which were like, it was like $5 round trip. You could drink beers on the bus. Like, it was, it took, you know, 20 minutes. And it was fantastic.
You couldn't do that from anywhere
in New Jersey.
Could you drink beers on the bus, or could you?
You know, like, I think that that's actually an excellent question, and one that I have asked myself without ever really trying to answer. It was dark on the bus, big bus, but I think you could. Like, I think that, because you can on New Jersey Transit on the trains and stuff.
What?
Yeah, same thing with Long Island Railroad. You can get it at the, it's like a weird, I used to take Metro North up to see my wife when she was in graduate school, and it was like, there'd be people that would get on there with like two tours, like heavy, tall boy things, and just handle that.
Okay, so are these like train? Are these like Amtrak trains?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. No, the well, like smaller, but like they're commuter rail trains, but they're like it's not like a subway.
I'm gonna be totally honest with you. I have no concept of this at all because do not have them in the Pacific.
Yeah,
this is also
like the furthest east. You've been on the subways now twice. Have you done that? Oh, there and back.
Let's see. I've been on 4 or 5 times.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, yeah. I'm into it. I like public transportation.
Oh, it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
See, this is what you were talking about in terms of riding a bike. I have a lot of friends that do that here, and I've never ridden my bike in New York City.
Oh, yeah, it seems scary.
It's super scary, and the mass transit is good enough that I'll just, like, deal with it.
Based on my day and a half that I've been here, this is my opinion.
Informed opinion.
This is my informed opinion. Everybody's a really aggressive driver, and everyone jaywalks.
Yes. And there's a a good book by David Owen called Green Metropolis that argues, in part, that the jaywalking is actually the most efficient. It should not be enforced as a rule, but like it actually is a part of the efficiency here, in part because it inconveniences cars, which is like the ultimate goal of like... There's a lot relative to their amount of sidewalk. But yeah, there's not a lot. Most people that live here don't drive because it's such an incredible pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And also because the trains are good. So like within the interior of the city, it's always going to be faster to, especially if you're going like up or downtown, it's almost always faster to get in a train than it is to take a cab. And it costs $2.50 instead of $22. And we can move into the transit portion of the podcast if you like.
David, I need to get out of it because I could talk about public transportation literally forever.
That'll be a separate.
I don't drive.
You bike hard.
I bike hard and I take buses everywhere in a suburb, which is actually kind of hard.
Yeah, I'd imagine. Actually, that sounds. Are there like sidewalks in Vancouver and stuff?
Yeah.
All right. It's not like the sort of that like weird dystopian suburb where it's like actually not for anyone.
No,
sidewalks are only there for like public utility guys trying to fix like things or whatever.
Well, it's a little bit, but it's not, you know,
like mildly dystopian.
Yeah, it's mildly dystopian,
which is fine.
It's like an old area. There's ranch houses.
That's good.
Stuff.
Yeah, that actually is like the type of that like. I think the most gracious living that I can think of is like those sorts of suburbs in Southern California where like the weather's always nice, but it's also like it's 80 years old, so it's like got a functioning town center and there's nice sidewalks and stuff.
Levittown type places.
Yeah. Or like Highland Park, California.
Ours is more like where I live specifically is sort of like converted farmland, but there was stuff before they started really converting it.
Yeah, it's not just like some grandiosely named.
Man, I went to my friend's house in Minnesota once. I'd never been to the Midwest before. I went to sleep. I woke up the next morning. I stepped out the door. I always wake up before everybody else. I stepped out the door and I was just like in an instant. I had never been out of the Pacific Northwest more or less. I was in an instant. I was like, oh my God. Cause it was just like 10 houses that looked exactly the same. One right after the other. And then sky.
Yeah.
And I had never not...
Was this not outside the Twin Cities?
Yeah, it was in Chaska or Carver.
Okay.
Which is a suburb of Minneapolis.
I really, really like Minneapolis. I think Minneapolis is great. If it wasn't located where it was, like, my wife and I have a lot of friends there. Like, I love visiting. I think it's a terrific place to live. That is also another place where everybody rides their bikes, but they've, like, actually designed it so you can do it without feeling terrified all the time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Portland's got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like
Anyway, to answer your question from back, the Prudential Center felt sad to me. Sadder than Barclays Center, sadder than Continental Airlines Arena during like
but
a
I,
18
I,
point
I
loss.
I didn't have the same.
It was, you know, it was weird. Bad. Like, once it became clear that the Nets were going to leave New Jersey, which was clear from the moment that the people that owned it sold it to Bruce Ratner, who's the real estate developer that developed the Barclays Center and then sold it to Prokhorov, or was bailed out by Prokhorov. Renner's not a very good real estate developer either. He's exceptionally good at getting subsidies and getting like stuff from favors from the state.
What makes a good real estate developer?
Don't
exactly?
develop things that look like space prisons.
Oh, okay.
And then like try to he developed a mall that basically is like It's like it was inspired by, I think, Alien 3, just in terms of its aesthetics, like sort of deserted prison ship, except for it's got like a Buffalo Wild Wings in it too. It's just like a drag of a place.
So it is exactly like Alien.
Yeah, it is. And that, yes, it is. I forget the director's cut does have the Buffalo Wild Wings in it.
And the alien eats the Buffalo Wild Wings, and you go, these are good.
Yeah, and then it eats Charles Dutton right after that. Yeah. Sad.
No one dips him in saucers.
Yes, that's true. The, but yeah, like, whatever. But once it became clear the Nets were leaving, like, the vibe definitely changed. Like, it was, a light sort of went out, you know? Like, so, for me at least, like, I cheered, because I'm from New Jersey, and they're the New Jersey basketball team, and because I, you know, cared about it so much when I was in middle school. But then, like, something about the way that Ratner went about, like, stripping assets, and then, like, sort of clearly trying to make level the way and get as much subsidy as he could in order to move to Brooklyn and all that, like, it felt insulting. And I think also New Jersey people have, by reputation, and in my case, you know, I can say from experience, like, an exceptionally and annoyingly attuned radar to being insulted or talked down to, or, like, so that, like, as soon as it became clear that this dude from New York that bought our team was going to try to move them to New York, because, like, it felt like an insult. Yeah. Even when the team wasn't the worst, like the post-kid trade, like it was like the Devin Harris, Vince Carter, that's not the worst, you know, watchable. But it wasn't, you know, it was clear that they were just passing through and that he would get rid of anybody rather than pay them, you know, if given the choice.
Do you feel like Citi Field has the sort of size? Or?
Yeah, that's another one, but I think they're still sort of figuring it out. Like, because that was, Citi Field's weird because it's such a, like, a projection, I think, of the Wilpon, like, weird vanities and strange, like, the idea that you own the Mets and then you build the shrine to Ebbets Field and the Brooklyn Dodgers, and, like, that's
instead
not,
of the Mets.
Yeah, like, it's not for anybody but you. Like, I understand that, like, Fred Wilpon is from Brooklyn, he grew up going to Dodgers games, and that's awesome. You know, that, like, I hope that that experience made him happy and that, like, it's some memories that he can take with him for the rest of his life, but, like, he doesn't own that team, you know? Like, it's just kind of, so when they got it, it had that sort of, like, unfilled in, had all the colors of everything, like, the seats and the general, like, aesthetic. It was all these, like, weird, neutral, kind of, like, bus station tones. And it's just, like, the Pets, like, just make it blue and orange. Like, throw a bone to the people that care about the team. Like, but, yeah, they're still working on that. And it's, like, in the same way that, like, Barclays has, like, really good food and really nice amenities, but, like, no sense of place or sense of belonging to the team that plays there, like, City Field definitely has that too, I think. But
Rose Garden.
Totally. I would love to go. That's actually on my list. I would like to.
Has that.
I want to go to a Portland Trail Blazers game with, like, Janet Weiss and Bill Walton. Just hang out.
I don't know. Bill's around sometimes.
Yeah. Janet Weiss, I think, goes a lot.
Oh, yeah, they go.
Yeah, she's a fan.
They all sat courtside one day. It was a big day for me.
Jesus, yes.
I didn't feel like it was a big enough day for everybody else, frankly.
I know. It's like, they're letting, I mean, you gotta remember who you are and what you're about at that moment.
And I went to college in Olympia. I went to the same college.
That's right.
And I was like, oh, this is convergence. This is beautiful.
Yeah, Texas A&M. They all went to.
And I went to Texas A&M.
Yep. And Aggies
Corbin,
wearing, you can't
Corbin
say,
podcast.
Corbin is wearing his A&M Aggies military uniform as we do this.
Yep.
Yeah, it's good. Slimming.
What is that?
Sorry, I don't know. I just think it's flattering.
Are you going to be slim?
No, I've seen other photos of you without the uniform. That's.
Oh,
now I'm airing direct message stuff. I'm sorry. Let's just move on. So you actually went to Evergreen State College, which is where you went.
The Evergreen State College.
So is there, like, a statue of Slater Kinney on the quad or anything?
Not yet.
All right.
Our quad was named McCann Plaza, and I had a professor, and I had a class with Professor McCann. They named the plaza after him while he was still working.
Oh, yeah.
There.
They did that at Pomona, too, with a guy, the philosophy professor. They named the dorm after him.
Yeah. He's a perfectly good professor. Like, I don't want to.
I know, but it always feels kind of weird, too.
It's like, there's a lot of old size.
Yeah. You know. Well, I mean, you have to work some years before they name plazas after you, mostly, right?
Yeah. I have so many pauses.
I know, it's different. Yeah, but you've been doing this podcast for years now.
Yeah, a decade.
Yeah, a strong decade, a legacy already.
Yeah. But I'm so tired of doing roundup shows.
It must be weird.
Just like going back on the past achievements, all the luminaries I've talked to.
Do you want to fly back to Davos? And you're like, I just got back. You know, like, I'm trying to relax.
Like, I was at Davos for fun.
Yeah.
And now they're like, no, come for work. And
yeah,
so, yeah, seriously. But I was just there for fun. So
Tom Friedman's asking about you.
Oh, my God. Can I tell you something about Tom Friedman?
Go, please.
Onion smells exactly like onions.
Yeah, you met him?
Yeah.
What is he? I'm not surprised. I remember hearing this about Larry King, too, that it's just, like, a thing that happens to a certain type of successful media gentleman. Like, that's, you get, the blessing is that you can, you have a lovely vacation home, like, you have all the stuff that you want, but, like, the downside is just...
You smell like onions.
Red onions. Constantly. Bermuda onions. So the, well, tell me about the roast, like, the actual experience of being...
I'm gonna be 100% honest with you.
All right.
It's hard for me, sometimes, how enthusiastic everybody is. And they are, that's real. They're really that enthusiastic. It's hard for me, because I'm a very, sedate, observant person.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the aggressiveness with which everybody everybody's really into it. And it's not, they're not always genius into it.
Like, there's just a noise level of constant excitement.
Yes.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
And,
you know, Brian Joyner wrote a thing for The Classical I thought was really telling and honest about that. After that Nets super fan, that kind of, like, the guy...
Yes.
Suicide was terrible. That Brian has season tickets for the Nets, and that guy was in his section. And he was like, you know, I appreciated his passion or whatever, his hustle. He's like, he was fucking annoying. Like, I felt bad about it. That's not the entirety of the piece, but, like, that sort of thing, like, that, like, just too muchness, like... Unless you're, like, really wanting to dive headfirst into that and
people
be a part
are,
of it.
I was writing about this the other day. Because something happened before Lillard wasn't in the All-Star game. People have a huge chip on their shoulder about Aldridge. Hmm. Especially about Aldridge and Love. Because Love didn't go to Oregon and he's from Oregon.
Oh,
and there's sort of, like, some weird residual things with him. And so it's always like, Aldridge is better than Love. Love doesn't. This all just like, and they're very chip on their shoulder about it, and they're very chip on their shoulder about. I can't believe I said chip on the shoulder 6 times.
That's all right. I think you've made clear that they have that there's a feeling that
They're very raw about not getting national attention, and it's not, and it's the fans, and it's some aspects of the media, and it's the people who work there. And so I'm going to say it's Lillard. It was something else that was occurring to me, but I'm going to say it's Lillard. So, like, Lillard didn't make the All-Star team. And people get, like, ratcheted about it.
Yeah.
And Lillard is, I was speaking to a reporter who reports on the team, and he, I hope I'm, no, everybody knows who I know, but I'm not going to. And he was saying that Lillard is spectacular copy. Like, Aldridge is terrible copy. Yeah, all right. He was saying Aldridge is bad copy and Lillard's great copy. Because every time you talk to Lillard, he's going to give you something. He comes up with crisp narratives to deliver. And the thing that he always says is, I'm slighted, I was this.
Which is
that.
Not like a novel narrative for an athlete to
no.
go with.
And I don't think it's untrue.
But it at least ensures that whoever is telling you about this stuff is always heated as shit when he's telling you about it.
Yes.
Like, which I imagine translates.
Yes. And I think that that aspect of him feeds into Blazer fans' perceptions of themselves.
Uh-huh.
And
or at least that one mirrors the other in
yes.
a way that the fan base would naturally find appealing.
Yes,
or, yeah.
Exactly. I think that it's fine that they don't get national attention. I think it binds the team to the community in a way that is good.
I can imagine it would be annoying, if it keeps coming back to that, though, this idea of being, like, I imagine that Spurs fans probably have some of this, too, where it's, like, you know, there's only so much success that, you know, any franchise is allowed to have, and, like, Blazers have been very good, been a very successful franchise,
yes.
And, like, you know, I guess if you need some reason to not feel like, I mean, like, it's if Damian Lillard needs to motivate himself like that, that's fine. Like,
absolutely.
I don't understand, like, the rigors that he must go through to go through a whole season to, you know, to be in shape the way he is, like, that's fine.
There
as
are a thousand
fan,
reasons
as a fan,
why I'm not
though,
a
it doesn't seem
athlete.
Fun to be that way. You know, like, if you're, like, so if Lillard needs to be that crazed in order to, like, work out as hard as he needs to work out, then I get it. But if you're just, like, if you're watching the game, like, why not, you know, why introduce bitterness into your life when you don't need it in a space that should otherwise be
reserved
it's mystifying.
For play.
It's mystifying to me.
And I definitely had that as a kid with the Nets, though, that was like, some of it was a New Jersey thing, but a lot of it was just being like 13 or 14 years old, you know, that was when I was most passionate about the Nets, but it was also when I most like, just had the urge to scream, you know, when I was not feeling heard or seen or whatever. And like, so there's all these like levels of transference that, God, I've written about this way too much, but that like with the Nets, that was like the most complete writing of like a team onto me onto the team, my sense of identity, the state and myself and whatever, like all of it together. So like, I can't really knock it. It's just like, you grow out of it, or you should. Like at some point you don't feel as slighted anymore because you're like actually trying to do stuff.
What do you feel like being from New Jersey is like?
It'd probably be more similar to being from anywhere else than people from New Jersey allow themselves to say. I mean, like, it's interesting. Like, there's, you know, I grew up in a, like, middle-class, upper-middle-class suburb, like, a lot of other places, you know, that are like that.
This is the type of place I grew up in.
Yeah, and it's like, so, it's not without character, without, you know, like, there's an accent that we have when we talk, and there's a way, you know, there's foods that we like to eat that are not always available everywhere else or whatever. But then there's like this other, that like Springsteen informed New Jersey thing where there's like this sort of doomed romantic struggle aspect of it. Like that was not real to me growing up. You know, like my parents are professionals, like I went to college, like it was never the sort of thing where like I needed to get out while I was young or whatever. It was just like, it was fine. It was like, I rode my bike to school. Like, it was not hard. There was not a lot of that. But yet, like, there's a tendency, I mean, the New Jersey people have to sort of, like, take that romance and borrow it. Not in a, you know, not for a bad reason or in a bad way, but just because, like, otherwise you're just, I grew up in the same suburb as you, across the country from you, you know? Even though that's probably closer to the truth.
We probably have home trees.
We had a lot of trees where I was.
Oh, yeah, Garden State.
Yeah. See, Corbin has been very struck. This is.
Oh, yeah, there's no trees here.
Yeah, and it's really clearly very off-putting for him. Like, there are some trees. Like, I feel like there's enough trees that, you know, maybe not as many as you might want.
I was speaking to David and another bigwig.
Yeah.
At the Vice Corporation.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say who.
It was Vice Presidential Biden.
Yeah.
During his visit.
Yeah. Oh, he's the Vice President of Vice now.
He is. He's the Vice. See where I'm going with this? You want me to finish it? It's good. President. Yeah. There you go. That was definitely worth it.
And I mentioned it to them. I was like, there's no trees here. And they were both like,
there's some trees.
What are you talking about? There's a tree out there. It's just like, yeah, that's not a tree. I think part of it is that you don't have evergreens here.
Not in volume. In New Jersey, yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of piney stuff.
By the time I have a friend who lives in Jersey, and by the end of yesterday, I was like, I got to go to New Jersey. I got to see a tree.
Yeah. No, that's where we got them. That's where they mostly are. You do have to leave town. But you're here for a long time. You got plenty of places you can get on a train.
I'm probably here for too long.
We don't know that yet. You've only been here for a day and a half. Does it feel like it's too long?
Nah, that's good.
Yeah, okay.
It's interesting. Subway's interesting.
You can just get together, touch base, talk about the Nets every day of your visit, if you want to do that.
Well, that's a little demanding.
I don't know if it is. You know where to find me, and it'd be weird for me if you did not try.
Well, I mean, I know where to find you because you've been sitting outside of where I'm staying.
It's nice. There's a tree. It's comfortable. Should we move on to a question? Or do you want to continue this confrontation for a while?
Let's see if I have one more question. I don't know. How's the classical doing?
It's good. It's all right. There's new people doing it now. Yeah. So I'm kind of step back into like an emeritus thing. Yeah. Corbin's recently had a couple of smash hit pieces for us.
And I'm working on something that will not be a smash hit.
It will. You don't know that. It's not going to have as many silly drawings in it, probably. No. But it's more of a different sort of piece. It's another side of Corbin Smith.
It'll come out. It totally will.
I think. I'm looking forward to it. I think, but yeah, it's going good. The people that are doing it are people that have been with us or written for us.
Colin's great.
Colin, okay. Holly Wendt, Nick Bond, who's like OG.
Evan.
Like,
does Evan live in New York?
Evan lives in, I want to say the Mountain Time Zone. I don't know exactly where.
Okay.
But yeah, no, that's our nod to diversity.
Sorry.
I mean, we're still not as diverse as I would like or whatever. But we do have somebody in every time zone in the United States now. Yeah, it's nice. There's four of them time zones. We don't have anyone in Hawaii or Alaska or U.S. Virgin Islands. But, you know, we're open.
You don't have a U.S. Virgin Islands rider?
We did, and there was some, yeah, this is hard.
I wonder what sports is like over there.
Maybe a lot of swimming, I'd imagine.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, it seems all right. Know that, like, Duncan was a swimmer as a kid, right?
Oh, yeah.
He'd be very, probably a very
then
good swimmer.
He, something happened and he became afraid of swimming. I don't remember what.
Was it? He was, I don't, is that true?
Actually, yeah, I'll look into it.
But he was pursued by water snakes or something. It was like, fuck
yeah,
it.
Like a shark or
bank shots.
Lightning or something.
Yeah, no, that's all very reasonable. Just thinking about it makes me want to go shoot jump shots and not go in an ocean. But yeah, classical's good, man. It's sad to, not sad. It's strange to not be working on it every day. It's been like 3 years of basically just doing that and doing all this other stuff too. But it's good. People that are doing it understand what it's about, and they'll make it better. They'll make it less just like me and things that I like. So I'm excited about that.
I'm very fond of the classical. Yeah.
Thank you, Corbin. The classical is very fond of you.
Oh,
yeah, man. Isn't that sweet? Should we high five again?
Yeah.
Right.
Good to talk to you, David.
Chris, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you to David. You can read his work over at Vice Sports. Follow him on Twitter at David J. Roth. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbina Smith, at CorbinaSmith. Stay tuned. There will be more episodes pretty soon. So thanks a lot. Have a good day.